Everyone, you are in for a treat today. And I can say that confidently because of the conversation I was having with our guest before the show, that it is very just energetic and humorous, and it's going to be a very down-to-earth, real conversation, which is the type of conversations that we love on I Could Never Be Here on the Popcorn Talk Network. We love sharing the stories, the real, authentic stories, the stories that, you know, you might not have heard before, and the stories that are inspiring because you hear the obstacles that people have gone through, the people that you see on your TV screens, the people that you go to their concerts, or you see them in magazines and you're like, man, I want to be that person, but oh, as the show title says, I could never be that person because maybe they had more money or maybe they knew people or they're not going through the struggles that I'm going through. And that is absolutely just not true. And we share the stories of the people who have achieved success on the show and help you realize that just like them, you too can overcome your obstacles and be able to achieve success. As always, we start the show with some advice for a better life. And this is something that you might have heard before, or maybe give a different spin on it, and that is your only competition is the person that you were yesterday. And I know this message, you probably heard it before, your only competition is yourself, but I feel like it's just especially pertinent today because you log on to your phone and on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and you see so many people and you're like, man, I want to be like them. Oh man, I want to be able to, you know, they're the reason that I'm not getting get that job. They're the reason I didn't get this or that. But instead of looking at it as you lost it because of them, maybe look at it that the company or who else didn't choose you because they wanted a better you. And someone that you can be tomorrow, or someone that you can be in a week if you put your mind to it and work hard and be able to just, you know, go after the things that you didn't think you could do. And if you actually put your mind to it and you work hard, then you can be that better you that they actually wanted to begin with. And then you will get those jobs, get those positions, be able to achieve the things that you never thought possible. And I know our guest today has done that several times, maybe achieved something that she didn't think was possible. So excited to talk with her. She just wrapped up the fourth and final season of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which phenomenal show. I know so many people are dedicated fans of that. We miss it already. It's only been a couple of weeks. Please welcome Gabrielle Ruiz.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me. So are we waiting a minute or 2 minutes before we talk about the Texas-sized waffle maker and
other... A lot of pride of Texas. That's where I'm from. To catch everyone up, we had this great warm-up chat of how Texas people have merch.
Yeah.
We have a lot of merchandise from there. We wear it loud.
Yeah, and I initially mentioned, like, oh, yeah, merch, like, you know, a keychain or obviously Texas belt buckle. And then it's like...
Go bigger.
No.
Go
like,
bigger,
what
go
do we got?
Go Texas.
Tell the people what they can get from Texas.
I have a Texas-shaped waffle maker.
Why not?
Well, first of all, waffles are delicious.
Fact.
That's an act. Yeah, it's a fact. And second of all, I mean, Texas is great. And so when you're eating it, it's also a game of like, where are you from? Because every time I explain where I am, where I'm originally from is Texas. I don't live there anymore, but I say South Texas. And just like what you said, you're like, oh, Houston. I'm like, no, keep going. You're like, oh, San Antonio. No, keep going.
Further.
And so I can like literally get the fork and be like, this is where I'm from.
And I feel like you can actually say, since you're going south, like getting warmer.
See where the butter's melting? That's where I'm from.
And your husband, you said, wanted to throw some of it away when you moved from New York.
I know, how dare he. Like, he's from Pennsylvania. Their state's not so cute to look at.
What do you want a Pennsylvania shape? No.
Just like... Like souffle maker?
Yeah,
like,
nope.
No. Creme brulee, Pennsylvania? Mm-mm. Okay, no.
Lame.
No, right? You understand. You get it.
I totally... Again, my parents had a Texas-shaped waffle maker. It broke, and they immediately had to go out and get a new one. And I was like, I guess. Yeah.
They just got to have it. I understand.
Yeah. No one wants, like, a Colorado shape. That's a rectangle.
No, it's just...
Boring.
Yeah, it's just boring. Yeah.
Texas has the right amount of shapes and dimensions.
Right.
Wow,
exactly.
We've really started the show off just...
Hope it's inspiring so far.
Hope this has inspired you to go on Amazon, and I'm sure for the right price, you can have a Texas-shaped waffle maker. Well, I want to get into, obviously, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which just wrapped up. Congratulations, by
Thank you so much.
On a great season finale, a great series finale.
The big one.
How, I mean, we're a couple weeks past that.
Has it set in?
Are you deep breaths? Do you feel great about how the show ended? I know a lot of people loved it. It felt like it really came together.
I do feel lucky that the relationship that the cast had with Aline Brosh McKenna and Rachel Bloom, the creators of the show, were just always so one-on-one and personal, and we were very, very close family. So coming from New York, I lived there for almost 10 years when I had booked Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which we'll get into. It's a really good story. And they've always been very transparent of how they always wanted to be four seasons. And coming from the theater world where you get a two-week notice before you... lose your job on Broadway. That is just extremely luxurious. This has been really the longest gig I've ever had that was consistent. When we would break in between seasons, I knew that I had 6 months mm-hmm. to search for other projects or also kind of just live. And so that was the beautiful shift in my life with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. That not only was Valencia amazing and I got to do musical theater on TV because that's what I've originally done, but I also was able to kind of breathe a little bit. So
yeah, you
took it took a while to get there, but it was definitely worth all the blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah, and you mentioned like the musical theater, and I think that's I want to talk about that later on in the show of like you laid a foundation of being able to have the triple threat, mm-hmm. being able to act, be able to dance, be able to sing, and a lot of people might not have invested the time into being able to do all those, and because of all that is why. You got this.
Well, and it what's the stat where you're supposed to do 10,000 hours or something to be mm-hmm. an expert?
Yep.
That wasn't me with acting. I mean, I was first a dancer from Texas, obviously. And before YouTube and all that cute stuff where you could have so much exposure in South Texas, there was none of that. So mm-hmm. I just knew that I just wanted to continue dancing out of high school. And my dance teacher said, of course, there's NYU because that's what the movies say. And that's the dream. And Juilliard's this dreamy place, you know, and felt like, you know, Never Never Land, New York City. And she was like, but also go to Oklahoma City University, audition for that. And that was the only college I got accepted into. And I thought New York was the dream. And so I was just a dance major first, fell in love with musical theater in college and stayed dance because I still love to teach. I love to mentor. Mm-hmm. And there was a great dance teaching program that was attached to our degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really start taking acting class until after my first Broadway show, when a lot of my feedback in my auditions were, she's really, really great. She's very talented. It's just her acting. Like, it's her acting. 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 And I was like, what does that mean? I'm memorizing lines. I'm saying it. I'm coming in prepared. At least I think it was prepared.
And
it was the third leg of that triple threat. Didn't really mm-hmm. happen until like my mid-20s.
And I think that's actually something that a guest a couple weeks ago that we had on mm-hmm. talked about. And it was that people look, I said, what is the thing that you look at in Hollywood and entertainment that you think it is that people see differently or see people see wrongly? Mm. And she's like, that acting is easy. Because you think, how many people are sitting at home being like,
I thought that too, and I was doing it.
I can act. Oh, yeah, I can do that. And I'm sure, you were like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I'm doing it. What else do you want?
Right. And so, I mean, I think what solved it for me was to feel at least present. Not again, like what you were saying in your moment before we started talking was like to not just be a better you, but just learn how to be you
mm-hmm.
and how to break that down and how to break that wall down to let people accept you in the room. And that's your job in the audition room is mm-hmm. to just do you the best and be as available to change and be as available to and be prepared, you know, mm-hmm. prepare the lines and prepare the work. But you should go in the room to change and just be available because they're just when someone told me about auditioning, like when you walk in that room, like they're hoping you're the person.
Wow.
They're like, please, because I mean, the line is on. They're on the line too, producers, directors, music directors, and whatnot. And you walk in, and they're like, please be, so we can stop looking.
And when I thought
of it that way, I was like, okay, I got some control in this room. Like I felt like we were equals, and it just really kind of took a pressure off of me to just please like me or please I hope I'm perfect or whatnot. So I just actually got to be myself, and I was like, all right, let me know. Let me know if this is it. And if it's not, then hopefully it's for something else.
I love that.
Isn't that like mind-blowing?
That is mind-blowing.
I know.
Because
it
does take the pressure off. Because like you said, you go in there and you're like, I need to impress them. I need to impress them. I need to impress them. Like, and it's mentally exhausting before you even get in there and have to talk or have to act or dance or whatever.
Creating all these assumptions that don't exist yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You are helping them out.
Mind blowing.
Ooh, we're a couple minutes in. We're already blowing your mind.
But even so, one more thing, though. David Hull went in for Josh Chan, Vincent Rodriguez's role.
Yeah.
This is his story, but Felicia Fasano, our casting director, tells it a lot. And Rachel does, too, because he walked in and was extremely talented. Or I think he went in for Greg, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I think Vincent Rodriguez III was already casted. And he was already like up there and, you know, with being considered for that role. And Felicia was like, he looks like a white Josh. And they were like, that's hilarious, actually. Rachel thought that's a brilliant thing. And then the white Josh role was written for David Hall. And he just became this beautiful love story with Pete Gardner's Daryl Whitefeather role. And just, you know, you never know. You just really go in and be yourself. And you are loved. And you're in this wonderful roster of great actors. And you just wait for it to work out.
And the reason you don't get a role today is the reason you get a role tomorrow. Ugh, a lot of times.
So true.
And it's hard to comprehend because you're like, but I don't want to wait until tomorrow.
I want
like,
it now.
Yes, I know. But the reason you don't get something today, you'll get it tomorrow. Your character, Valencia, I know you're not exactly like Valencia. If Valencia is like the total frenemy, like total sarcastic.
That's my favorite compliment I get from people. You're so nice. Oh my gosh, you're so nice. But then I would hit them back and be like, oh my God, thanks for watching the show. And I was like, I need to stop shoving people because I'm excited that they love the show.
Did you enjoy being able to play out that role though? Because it's not you.
Absolutely.
And being able to be like, oh, well, that's just my character. But it's like you able to be that person.
Well, just being the mean girl in season one. When we've done some live shows and live tours and whatnot, and we're about to go into to do one in Radio City, two shows actually, I love saying, can I curse on this show?
Yeah.
I love saying, let's bring it back to season one, Valencia, bitches. And the audience goes mad because it's like, yeah, I mean, you loved her for hate. You hated loving her. And I did too. And every time I would get an insult on Twitter, like, how dare she do that to Rebecca? I was like, thanks for watching. Thanks for loving the show. And it just... To be so, I feel like villains kind of get this rap for just being mean when they're just really honest.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't ever have to feel a pressure to be funny. I was able to be kind of this like straight man to Rebecca Bunch, to Rachel Bloom's character, where I would set up all these things for her to be Rebecca Bunch. I had an absolute blast. And then her evolution was just such a special treat and a cherry on top.
Yeah. Did you ever take your character off screen? Was there ever a point she came out and you were like, whoa, I did not mean to act like that?
My eyebrow raises a lot higher now, I have to say. I say the eyebrow raises. The muscle grew a lot stronger in 4 years. I'd say like my sass and my honesty with some sass, you know, tones.
Yeah.
Definitely feels a lot more freeing now, and I feel very liberated in my life.
And you always have that excuse, too, of be like, oh, well, it was a character. It's.
I do find a lot of inspiration of Valencia from my sister, so I tell her that, and she kind of hates it, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, it's you.
The other compliment for this show that I think this show did in 4 years, it was real and authentic. We talked about that. Mm. And B, I think it was so diverse in terms of whole female cast, different ethnicities in there. It just really, talk about what on your side, what you thought it did for entertainment and for just the industry of Hollywood, being able to have Rachel be able to create the show and be able to be part of that and be able to have a female dominated cast. Like, how much do you think this show changed culture in 4 years?
That's a great question. Where do I begin? I would say the number one thing for me personally is the moment Aline Brosh McKenna pulled me aside and said, we are going to take a storyline for Valencia where she falls in love with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and I just want to let you know, we're not going to give you a song about it. Because a lot of breakthrough moments for every character, or for any kind of emotional point for a character is a song and dance in musical theater. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I said, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. I said, there's no song and dance about it. And she's like, that's Valencia's character, where, because Aline said that she knows a woman, she knows a really good friend of her for many years that had children, was married, and then once the kids left the nest, they got a divorce, and then she just so happened to fall in love with a woman because she made her laugh. Mm-hmm. And they just have lived the rest of their lives together. All our friends were like, so what's the change? Like, how did that happen? Did you always know? Was it this underlying story that you had hidden for all your life? And she's like, no, it just so happened to be a woman. I thought that story in that way hadn't been told. Valencia didn't have a coming out. Her parents were, you know, and that story needs to be told too, but it just hadn't been, in my opinion. It was so beautiful to see that. The person who was so extreme in her emotions and also didn't know what laughter was. This woman just made her life. This woman laughed and found her funny. And for Valencia, that's the mind-blowing moment. And then it just cuts to them happy in that episode. And I thought that was so brilliantly done and not done before.
And I think you hit the nail on the head where in such you know, in so many moments in society, people want to analyze things and be like, oh, what was this? Why was it?
Right.
And
it's
like,
what's the backstory?
Yeah, well, yeah. What? And then they're like, oh, let's majorly blow it. And it's like, no, it's life.
Exactly.
Just and live.
Just live. And some people felt, I mean, some fans tweeted back to us saying, thank you so much for telling my story in that way where everyone was like, cool. Okay, so what are we going to have for dinner? And just kind of moved on. And like, oh, and it was a relief and whatnot. But the actual like metaphor of like there was no song and dance about it. And like what a pun for our show where Valencia didn't have to have this whole like 3-episode arc about it. It just happened. And and not to desensitize it at all or anything like that.
No.
Supporting any community out there that needs to be their story needs to be told. But I feel like that's also one as well.
Yeah, sometimes so much entertainment, you overhype things.
Yes.
And then you're like, oh, well,
Hollywood
come down
things.
From the hype. And you're like, no, it's again, it's life.
Yes.
Just live, you know, because at the end of the day, when you get off Facebook or Instagram like that, you still have to live.
Right.
It's still your life.
And my favorite day on Instagram is when I'm not.
Yes.
Right?
That's
and so
a, that's
when
fantastic.
I actually, when I put my phone, I've made a, my resolution this year was to actually not sleep. I think it was last year, just not sleep with my phone in the bedroom and actually put it away to look around and just be silent and be still. Right?
Yep.
And that's what I felt with, again, like with Valencia and Beth's story, that just, it was very still and it was good. It was just good.
Do you have one of those phone coffins?
What?
Do you know about these?
No.
These are a real thing. It's like a small little box.
Is it for vampire
box.
Phones?
This is a small little box because it's like you're putting your phone to sleep.
Oh, yes. Someone tried talking me into that on Instagram, and I was like, it's a sock. Okay. You're making me spend money on a sock. I can just put it in the living room and walk away. 5, 6, 7, 8.
I have this much self-control. I'm going to be okay.
Do you have one? I'm sorry if I
insulted
you about your coffin sock.
I'm still like, I know I'm addicted, which is the first step, right? I feel confident that I've admitted the first step. I haven't gone to step number 2, but...
What is it? Negotiation?
Yeah, right? So, yeah, it's like I still, like, I know it's the last thing I check before I go to bed. It's the first thing in the morning. But
oof,
it's like,
no, boo-boo. Not,
I
at
know.
Least not in the morning.
I know.
Get one of those alarm clocks that glows up and sings a bird song. And then you will be so happy when you walk to your phone because you're ready to work.
It's true. It's
trust
true.
Me. It helps me with my auditions. Listen, like with work, period.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. You look at that. You inspired me to do it.
We'll see. Tweet me. Instagram a selfie at, you know, whatever time you go to bed and say, my phone is in the living room. Good night, Gabrielle. And put it down. And I can't wait to see it.
I will do that. I will definitely do that. You mentioned like the song and dance numbers. Versus like when you, obviously you have Broadway experience and you're on Broadway and you have so much time sometimes to learn things. Mm-hmm. That was not always the case on this show where it's like a couple days you have to.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prepare for that of going in and knowing that it's just, all right, hey, we got a couple of days, got to get this song number, got to get this dance number.
I love it. I absolutely
really?
Love it. I love the adrenaline. Oh, it's my rocket science. Like when I was in physics class and like pre-Cal in high school, I was like, why is everyone so excited in here? Oh, I just have to get through this class. Ugh. But then when I learned, like, I was an understudy on Broadway 3 times. Mm-hmm. My debut was In the Heights. And when I went on for the first time as a principal on Broadway, I had not learned second act yet. And I loved it. Like, I just like the adrenaline, be the hero, you're saving the show.
Yeah.
And like the dance captain who teaches you the show is talking to me on the sides of the stage to say, okay, this is what's happening next, blah, blah, blah. Don't let Rosie's leg fly over and kick your face because she's coming in at the 38 count and blah, 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 blah. And like I was just like, got it, done. So I love it. I'm sorry it's not a great story.
No.
Do
you enjoy the adrenaline of like being on edge and knowing something could go wrong? Is that
it's
it?
More being a team to make it happen. Mm. Like the batten down the hatches. Mm-hmm. Here we go. And especially from a live theater, higher stake from television. And television, you can go back.
You can, yeah.
And so, and not
retake,
often.
Cut.
Yeah, cut, let's go back. But also I learned while transitioning from musical theater, live theater to television theater, that if a mistake happens, do go back because sometimes they use the mistake take.
Yes. Sometimes
it's
better. If you
watch, I'm so good at yoga. There's this flip I do on a guy's shoulders and my whole like costume is on my face. And if you, in the take, I get my hand and I fix it. Like I swipe the skirt down and I was like, oh, it's because it's not musical. It's not live. I should have just, like, really, like, fallen on my face so they don't use the tank.
And I always say, because I used to be in TV news. I used to be a local news, like, reporter and anchor. And the biggest thing I miss is, like, the live TV. You're on location. And you're breaking news, and you have 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, cut to you. Tell us what's going on.
And there's no turning back. Yeah.
And you always think, too, if you mess up, you gave the people exactly what they wanted.
Yeah.
Because that's why people watch live.
Listen, Idina Menzel, when I did If Then with her on Broadway, mm-hmm. when she would mess up, she would literally break the fourth wall and talk to the audience, and they would go crazy. And it was never, like, not classy. I mean, it was a very classy way.
Right.
Sometimes,
manner.
There was one time when the house lights didn't go down, and there's this whole blackout moment where she's on a spot, and we, in the blackout, the entire cast runs from stage left to right all the way onto the stage, but the lights didn't go down in the house, so they saw us running. And she just commented whatever beautiful thing and funny thing she said just really makes the audience feel like they're with you, you know? So they love it.
There'd been talk of bringing Crazy Ex to Broadway or
Why not?
Do you want that to happen? Has there been talks or a TV movie? I mean, has there... What do you know that
could we can share like, with the fans? Could you imagine, like, Craziest Girlfriend in middle school? Like, all of a sudden, how awesome that would be? All the hormones rushing.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not in charge. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
All right.
I'd be down for it. I'm not going to do it, but I'll go watch the show. I'll do the red carpet. It's hard. Listen, musical theater is hard. I'm not like running back to 8 shows a week, let me tell you. The moment I learned that there's free food and television sets,
crafty.
You can't make me go back, man.
It's beautiful.
To the bodegas and going to Dean and DeLuca and spend $30 for a sandwich that was made 5 days ago.
Broadway played a huge role. Like you talk
I'm grateful.
About,
I'm really grateful. I swear.
I know. I absolutely. Broadway played a huge role in you getting this role. I know, like, Lin-Manuel was kind of, helping you get this. And you talked about the crazy story. How did you talk about to the audience how you got this role?
Sure. Always wanted to do Broadway. Mm-hmm. Loved it. My first big break was A Chorus Line out of college. I did the first national and then booked In the Heights a year after that with a lot of auditions in between that were no's. And it was like West Side Story was happening and like a lot of great Broadway shows that I went in for and didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
And so In the Heights happened. And I mentioned that because that was like my honeymoon of New York. Like, I was on a Broadway show. I was dating a guy in the show. We would go and, like, have dinner in between. I was living on the Upper West Side, spending all my money,
so
running
exciting.
Late. Running late, taking cabs. I'm doing it. And after that was my first big slump in the city of, like, not booking. It's her acting was the theme.
Yep.
Went to acting class and then started learning how to save money. And I say all that because, you know, we can go into all those struggles, but I just remember always feeling like for new shows, I was a replacement. So there was a lot of fear that I had in me that I was – what I was putting into my brain was I'm just B team. Like whenever I can be the replacement, I'm always first replacement. But people just to be on Broadway is a big deal. It's an honor just to be on Broadway, Gabrielle.
Yes.
Get it together and grow up. Like it's fine. But I was always afraid that I just was never A-team or never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So when the season of Hamilton was happening, On Your Feet was also coming to Broadway. Aladdin was already on Broadway. And Hamilton was a big deal, and it was all the same team. And I never was seen for Hamilton. We tried getting me in, but I just never was seen for it. There were a lot of workshops for On Your Feet that I was never asked to do, and I knew the whole creative team. And I was like, record scratch, how did that not happen?
Yeah.
What is Gabrielle not doing for people not to think of her? The Texas comes out all of a sudden. and then also Aladdin, like just those auditions. I went in for Jasmine many times. Courtney Reed, who originated the role, is the perfect person for it. And she's actually doing it in London right now. I mean, the woman is like Jasmine in real life and a saint and a wonderful person. So like, well, I'm not competing with that. No way. Of course that makes sense. So when On Your Feet was happening, there was a moment when everyone in auditions and all the other auditions were like, Gabrielle, wait a minute. You're doing On Your Feet, right? I mean, you're doing it, right? You do salsa, you can sing, act, and dance, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, I mean, I keep going in for it. And it was the first time where I just kind of was smiling about it and not letting it get to me, where I was like, you know, I don't know why.
Yeah,
I wasn't resentful.
Yeah.
I didn't need to get like a glass of wine after. I wasn't depressed about it. And I just was like, I know my worth. I know that it, I guess it doesn't make sense to me why I'm not booking this job. Mm-hmm. And the whole team, I've worked with them in many other projects before, from the director to the choreographer to the music director. Didn't ever meet like the Estefans, but there was a final audition that they had me come in, and every other woman in the, all the other women in the waiting room were 15 to 20 years older than me. And I texted my husband, and I was like, I have no idea why I'm here. They're really trying to make me and put, they're really trying to put me in the show, and it's over.
Wow.
I was like, I shouldn't be here. And I just remember walking in, and like, it was kind of like this, like, putting this dream to sleep. It was time to say goodbye. And it was like kind of maybe the best audition I had, because I just really sang a great song. I did, I made them all laugh, and I walked out and I knew it. And it was the first time where I was like, I know my worth, and this is not for me. I cannot force this to happen. And because I didn't book that, 2 months later was Valencia auditions. And I sent in a self-tape into outer space, like they feel, where you always send all these tapes away and they never come back. And this one did.
Wow.
And so I always say it's like, because all the other girls were doing On Your Feet, all the other Latinas. So that worked out.
Like that,
I'm kidding. The stats. No. I was like, well, I mean, they're all booked. So they didn't go in for Valencia. So that made sense. Everyone has their seasons, because there was like, it was a wonderful group of women my age, my type, my talent in the city, where we saw each other all in the same rooms, and we would all text each other, like, who got it? Who got the phone call 2 hours later? Because they're going to call or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was wonderful that I was so happy for all my friends who booked that role, those dance roles, and like, you know, the understudy for Gloria, you know, Anna and whatnot. And it just, I felt okay about it. And so when Crazy X happened, I got a call on a weekend from my agent. He was like, so they really responded to your tape. They would love to see you at the CBS studios in New York for a Skype session with the creators, and they want to talk to you about the role. And so you kind of don't want to get excited, but of course you do, and you get you start getting a little more emotionally attached.
Yep.
And Valencia was not in the pilot. She was not in the first episode. So there, I guessed on who she was, and I remember reading the script, and there was one line that Josh says, Greg says it. He's like, Josh is not coming to this party because he's at his girlfriend's sister's quinceañera. And I remember thinking, I was like, you know, I'm just going to guess that that's Valencia. I'm just going to guess because it would make just something, you know, intense and would raise the stakes in the scene. And then I had a Skype session with Rachel and Aline, and I was right, thankfully. You always sometimes guess really wrong in auditions. Like, you really guess wrong, and you have to go for it. And sometimes you walk out of that room, and you're like, well, I don't know what that was.
That was a
that
swing
was
and a miss.
Awful. This one finally worked out. I mean, out of like a million, you know, the batting average that you feel you go through. And my favorite memory of that Skype session with Rachel and Aline, where I remember asking them, I was like, would you like me to sing again when I retape with your notes? And Rachel was like, oh, no, it's fine. I've been stalking you on YouTube. We get it. You can sing. And I was like, finally. All that shame was promoting. It's finally pulling through where I was so like type A specific about like if I was kind of cracking a little bit or something or the quality isn't good. Yes, I'm not going to put it on YouTube. It's going to show up one day.
Yes.
And when people think I'm crazy about those things, like I'm like planning 10 years ahead.
Yep.
You should listen to me, man.
You're laying the foundation, which is, again, it's like what we talked about. Be able to do all three things, be able to get this job. Did you think obviously, I'm sure you thought at the time, you're like, wow, I'm really glad I didn't get Broadway. Do you think about that every year or every time? Every time now, maybe when something doesn't go your way
Absolutely.
And you're like, oh, well, there's a reason.
Oh, I had a wonderful pilot season this year. It was the first time I was able to really go out for new projects on television. Mm-hmm. And I was super close to one thing twice. And at the very last minute, it went another way. And to remember everything that I just went through and to remind myself my own lesson that I, you know, try to tell the youngins it's going to be fine. And the reason you didn't get it is because it's even if it's a no, it's not right now. Mm-hmm. And it's tough every time. And you just got to breathe through it and also allow time to be sad about it. Because if you try to resist it, it will persist.
Mm-hmm.
The anger, which turns into resentment, which can turn into, you know, you keeping yourself from other people and then Instagram, forget about it. I mean, at least that wasn't there when I started theater and, like, started this career. I mean, it's vicious to yourself, to your own soul. And when you wake up in the morning and that's all you're doing is comparing yourself to people. And I absolutely have to remind myself the same lesson over and over. It can drive you mad. It literally can drive you mad. But the people you surround yourself with, the other, you know, activities and hobbies that are not industry related, to just have a healthy lifestyle, I believe, is just really, really key to stay sane in the insanity.
As much sane as possible, at least, yeah.
As much. But also, like, again, that one stage, though, of being sad about it. Like, I remember in New York, the B-team phase, when I was just, like, crying to my mother on the phone, and she was like, "Do you want to come home?" And I was like, "No, I just need to cry about it. And then I will wake up and I'll just try again tomorrow, but just let me be sad." You know what I mean? And I just remember that. So I really, really, truly believe that you being sad that you didn't get it is okay. Feel it and then move on.
You mentioned you were an understudy three times.
I was.
Is that normal? I mean, what, for someone who doesn't know Broadway acting, I mean, is that, obviously understudy means that you're the backup, right?
You're the person that's on the sides, ready to go.
In case someone calls in sick, in case something happens, understudy three times. How many times is a normal person understudy? And, like,
I feel like it's a niche position, because you have to be able to do, you know, the same song and know all three harmonies, because both all the three, and especially, like, for example, in the Heights, I understudied Vanessa, Nina, and Carla, and they're all in the same salon song, and I had to learn all the harmonies that weren't always, one person wasn't always on the top harmony, but I loved it, and it's a lot of homework. It's a lot of watching on the sides. When you're an ensemble member anyway, it doesn't mean you're off stage the whole time. I was also on stage as an ensemble person. So you're also watching other people while you're on stage and just, like, actively rehearsing things. It's a lot more time because you have rehearsal during the daytime before the show to have, like, some runs at it. I feel like it's a certain community of people in theater that do that. And the harder position is a swing on Broadway, that they are the unsung gladiators that understudy the ensemble.
Wow. So they have to know a lot.
And everything is almost all the same, right? So it's also, like, more general and more people. And so, like, if you're doing, like, right, left, marching, facing wall four, but the person right next to them who they also understudy is on wall three on the other foot, like, they have to know all of that. And if they run into a person... It's obvious.
Yes.
So they're like, I mean, I have to just, you know, mad props to all of our swings out there, because it's like understudies on steroids. It's bananas. They're off stage the whole time.
What was your attitude when you got the understudy position? Obviously, when you wanted the main position, realized you were, again, the understudy on maybe, like, time one, I'm sure you're like, well, I got something.
Yeah.
Time two or time three, how did you approach those of trying to learn or grow?
That's a really good question. I have to say... Well, I had experience. So based off experience, it was nice to know how much work it took and how much attention it takes. And also, I was glad that I liked it, you know, versus feeling just taking a job because I needed it, right? So I did enjoy changing it up, too, because 8 shows a week for a year, you have to keep it fresh. You have to keep it also consistent. You have to keep it interesting for the audience. And then the audience might not laugh one day, so you have to stay active. And I when I did a chorus line, I was a principal in that show. And I started, like, making false adrenaline things to me, like freaking myself out, like, oh, I'm not going to know my lyrics, or I'm going to forget. And it was all false. I just remember thinking that, like, I'm just kind of bored maybe, right? So I need something to, like, you know, I'm making my own drama. So being an understudy, there's always drama. And again, like, the hero feeling of being able to save the show last minute, or someone is, like, I did enjoy taking that position to just be that one insert to keep the show running forward. And also understudying the legends that I was able to, like, follow off stage as well and ask them questions about their track and see the characters that they developed. One of my favorite moments, though, when you go on the first time as a principal from the understudy position, I make sure that the show is it's a very humbling thing. Like, you got to make sure the principal's shows feel the same. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't give him like this really different character or a really big different line or a different like sidestep. You can't make it bigger and stuff because they're like, whoa, like this is not my show. And you know, as a team member, you don't want to distract them. Mm-hmm. So I make sure to like, it was always an honor to do that for them, to make their show wonderful and the same so they can do their show. And then after they see you a bit and, you know, you're holding hands with that person because you're a couple and they get used to Gabrielle, then I can start adding, like, my character development into it. And I always enjoyed that process with all the other actors on stage.
You mentioned being able to take things from people and be able to ask things from people. And I had read something or watched something where you had talked about the importance of humility and how, like, that was something that you had to learn, because I feel like in any time of entertainment, people are like, no, I can do this. I can do this by myself. I can do this. And you talk about the importance of being able to always know that there's something you can learn from every single person in the room.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Talk about how you learned that and how you approach anyone.
Like on the street?
Yeah. Well, no. So, when did you
learn? I mean, I'm humble on the street too. If you ever run into me.
How did you learn the importance of humility, and talk about what you kind of how you even just use that in life of knowing that, hey, I can learn something from anyone?
Sure. I just, especially like from a performer's point of view, is what I can give you today is all that I can. It might not be tomorrow. It might not be yesterday's, especially like live performing. And when my voice was, you know, going awry or feeling hoarse, there, Kristen Wyatt, she's a beautiful, beautiful musical theater performer. And she said that to me in the dressing room when I was just so quiet and like dreading going on stage because I wasn't sure how my voice was going to be. And she was like, what you can perform today is all you can give. And I remember thinking that, like, I am a body, I am a vessel. Everyone around me is here to help me. And so when someone is in that position on stage or in that position with me in a cast, like, I just remind them of that too. Like, what you have today, if your leg isn't as high or you're working on an injury or you're feeling like you are distracted because family is, you know, something in your family life is going crazy and whatnot, this is all you can give and that's okay. And it just kind of takes the pressure off to be able to be present. And that was a big lesson for me that I try to, like, to humble myself, to also, like, remember that fans or the audience or the viewers and the directors and everyone is really wanting just you to feel good about what you're doing. And that's okay.
Absolutely. Let's talk goals. Let's talk, I know you're
hashtag big, goals.
Hashtag goals. Hashtag, I was going to say that in like a total, didn't do it. just like I was writing a hashtag on an Instagram post. Hashtag goals. Hashtag goals. Blessed.
Hashtag humbled. Hashtag Gabrielle Ruiz.
I know you're big on vision boards.
I am. Right? Man, you did your homework, man.
I did my homework. Talk about what you...
Oh, my gosh,
how do
I'm
you
excited
decide,
to talk about my vision boards.
When did you get into vision boards?
I just said today, I was like, man, I need to do my vision board. It's so expired.
There's a reason. There's a reason you came in today, because I'm challenging you. Just like you're challenging me on the phone, I'm challenging you with the vision board.
I've got to do it tonight. So during struggle bus times in New York, I need to make money. And this MLM company got to me. And it was not the usual ones that you know. It was actually like a health and wellness one. And I just joined it to make money. I was like, whatever. I can sell anything. I come from a salesman family. Let's do it. And then I actually stopped getting sick and I actually started getting healthy on it. It actually worked. Ugh. And one of the biggest like first coachings that like my upline did with me, Melinda Usandivares. Mm-hmm. Hey, girl. She was like, make a vision board. And I was like, what? I was like, I don't have time for that. And she was like, no. She was like, I was like, how much money am I going to make? Like foaming at the mouth in New York City, like just rabid in the concrete jungle, you know? And she was like, no. What do you want? Like, what's your why? What? I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, what things do you wish you could have? Like, where do you want to go on vacation? Or what is it that you want? And I remember just how much I learned. I was breathing again. My face lit up. I like my shoulders maybe lowered 10 inches, and it was just it made such an impact in my New York life that, you know, you're so overstimulated by humans and just always like go in the grind that you can't slow down in New York. And so that slowed me down, and it gave me another it just gave me an outlet to remember why I was there and also like how to live there, not just work there. Mm-hmm. So that's how vision boards changed in my life. But a roommate of mine who's a yogi, and she's just a wonderful person, always did vision boarding as well. And so we made a promise to each other to host a vision board soiree, VBS, not to be confused with Vacation Bible School.
Similar.
But we called it VBS.
Probably there was a similar wines. Amount of wine. Yeah, similar amount of wine at both events. Yeah.
But the joke was VBS every Sunday, like third Sunday of the week, of the month. And we hosted a vision board party that was not us talking about work, not talking about, you know, those kind of goals. And anybody could invite people. And the change of every human that would walk in that living room, to the point when they entered to when they exited, you were meeting people on the account of their dreams versus on the account of work, on the account of goals, on the account of struggles and what they don't have. Mm-hmm. And you got to see people, and someone was like, I'm looking for an elephant. And you would meet someone because you found that elephant for them. And just it was just so amazing. I needed it. My roommate needed it. Everyone that came had a wonderful time. And so I still do host those as much as I can.
And I feel
it's a
like,
nice way to meet people.
Absolutely. I feel like vision boards definitely help you stay focused, not on just like what you want, but what you want right now.
Yeah.
Because everyone has a plethora of goals.
Absolutely.
A plethora of things that they want to do, but it's like, maybe not this year.
Well, and also, though, vision boards also give you the opportunity to find something that inspires you visually or just, instigates or provokes mm-hmm. a feeling when you see the image. And I always encourage people to put that on your board as well, because that shit comes back. And all of a sudden it makes sense. And you're like, whoa, that popcorn talk picture, whoa. And just like it makes sense. Or you just took pop out of the logo yep. and you mm-hmm. and the pop means something later. And it is scary how magical, literally magical mm-hmm. it is that your brain and your subconscious is projecting something that you didn't even know wasn't time then, it is mm-hmm. now.
Absolutely.
Whoa, everyone go vision board tonight. It's so much fun. It's a great excuse for arts and crafts and wine.
Yeah. If you need another excuse for wine, here's another one. Yeah. you are obviously happily married to Philip, and I know he's involved in entertainment too.
Yes.
How much do you guys compliment each other, and how important is
that? Well, he's not an actor, thank God.
No, yeah. Why do you say that? Why...
There only needs to be one of us. It needs to be one. It's so dramatic all the time. No, I'm sorry. What was your question? Totally hijacked that one.
How do you compliment each other? And did you find that it was, I know some people in entertainment don't like to be with someone who is not in entertainment, if that made sense. They like to be with someone not in entertainment. How do you feel like being with someone else in entertainment helps complement your relationships, help complement your growth?
Well, he's a lighting designer, mm-hmm. not an actor. And we met on Match.com, and our like three non-negotiables matched, and none of them had to do with work.
What are you mind if I ask the non-negotiables?
Sure.
What are those three non-negotiables?
Well, I discovered I grew up Christian mm-hmm. and loved it. Loved that was a big part yeah. of my life. I walked away from it in my 20s, and then I rediscovered that it was a big part of me, that more than I knew. I didn't really choose it. I feel like that was just my connection to something bigger. And the other guys that I dated, they were the ones that had the problem with it. And you think like the Bible beater people like me, you know,
yeah.
that we're considered to be like, you have to be Christian or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, I'll compromise. It's fine. You can mm-hmm. be spiritual, whatever you want. And they were the ones like, I can't do that for you. And I was like, oh, like this is like mm-hmm. a big part of my life that I need to find someone to like yoke myself with mm-hmm. to be able to go in the same path to like raise, you know, a life with and a family, mm-hmm. hopefully. So that was a big one. I put that first. And then, I mean, the other ones are just like, we just, everything that we talked about that were non-negotiables, like, we just were like, yeah, me too. Cool.
Yeah.
And, like, we didn't live together until we got married, mm-hmm. which was my favorite one to tell people because they're like, oh,
really?
I'm so sorry. Well, why? Yeah. You know, you should, like, try that out. And I was like, listen. I'm a bachelorette, and I like my colorful home. Mm-hmm. I like my blue walls and my pink flowers and my red couch and my yellow kitchen and my green bathroom. It looks like a spa.
Wow, total rainbow.
Lots of colors. I'm a very colorful person. Philip had, like, black plates, black bar, gray walls, black entertainment center. Like, we were so opposite. And, like, that was, like, a big choice to make, a compromise to live mm-hmm. together. And we didn't want to make that compromise until we got married. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and also, honestly, the 50% divorce rate, come on now. Like, don't even try. Don't even try to think I don't have a chance. Like, my chances are just as bad as yours, dude. Or just as good.
There you
like, don't
half
put
full.
That on me. So I just remember that. That was one of our non-negotiables, and I don't remember the
third
one.
So who won with the wall color and the... is it colorful in your place, or is it all black?
You know, I do like... what's that... The Magnolia Home People in Texas. What's that TV show?
Is it the twins? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Joanne Gaines?
Yes,
Chip and Joanne?
Gaines were like all gray tones. No shiplap. I think it's a little extra. But we like the browns and the grays. And we decided, Philip kept sending me photos like, well, what about this photo? What do you like in this living room and not? And I was like, listen, like too many text messages, A. But B, he was the one that pitched, let's make a vision board.
What? That's
I
when you
so
know.
Impressed. It's still up, and it really helps us like create a home that we both liked, and we talked about why and why not. And so when we go and look for things, it works out.
That's awesome.
It's a lot of gray. It's a lot of gray. A lot of white. A lot of gains in there.
What drives you now? I mean, you, obviously, we just wrapped
drives
up.
Me now.
We stretched up Crazy X, and the you know moving on to a new thing. What drives you? And obviously, you're in a relationship. What drives you moving forward professionally, personally, like in everything you want to achieve? You're like, this is why.
I'm definitely in the chapter of my life where we're about to start trying to make a family. Nice. And this pilot season, like, I remember getting up really early. And we have a condo right now. Mm-hmm. And with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, it was, again, like, it was such a great, like, a nice wind in the sails for 4 years of like being able to like really get on our feet financially mm-hmm. and invest and save money. So we bought a condo in LA. We moved from New York. And the goal now, my publicist knows this too, I was like, next is the house.
Ooh.
Like, I want my own four walls. So like the domestic part mm-hmm. from being so career driven from both of us, Philip moved here because I booked Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and we were getting married. I was ready to be bi-coastal. And he was like, no, I don't understand what that means. I'm going with you. And nobody had ever done that for me, ever. And so the domestic part of our lives that we both love to be and to become is now in that we're in that phase now. So there were some mornings in pilot season where you're going in for like four things and there's piles of clothes in the living room and you're just doing like as you're trying to memorize and just be as present as possible. And my dog Leela was like dragging out of her crate and I was like, come on, Leela, we gotta get a house.
Let's get going.
Let's go, girl. I gotta be on time because we gotta get the house. So we gotta get that house is the phrase right now.
Yeah. Well, I love how it's too, like the definition of success, I'm sure, changes in various
Absolutely.
Stages of life too.
Yes.
Where that's success right now. Mm-hmm. Being in a happy family, being in a place of your own.
Right. And I didn't book anything this year immediately out of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And I look at my condo and I'm like, it's really nice. It's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
And we're all really happy. And like there's so much more space than New York than we mm-hmm. I mean, I have for the first time a closet that's not you know, fits 10 clothes in there. You know what I mean? Like, I cannot, yep. I look back on that itty bitty little closet in New York. It's like, I can't believe I had four seasons in there. And now I have not enough room for all my shoes and my purses. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, that is a difference.
Come on,
big,
Ruiz.
Big difference between LA and New
Perspective.
York. Yeah, it was like, what you can actually, you can get a condo here versus there. It's all apartments. And
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
so we got the puppy, which has been nice.
Nice.
And we have the condo. It's ours. But to be able to, like, rent that place out and to get a house. That is the goal that we would love to hit at some point, but the family is, you know, we're in the market.
You're in the market. That's great. Looking back, the final question that I love asking people is in 50, 75 years, 100 years, whatever, and people look back on your life and your career and they're like, man, she was in this. And they're like, oh, and someone's like, who in your, they're like, oh, they were blank. How do you want people to remember you professionally and personally? Someone describes you in 50, 75 years. What do you want them to say?
Oh, my goodness, with pressure. I guess wonderful. I would like to think people that would think I would like for people to think that I was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of, like, career, like, as a human. Mm-hmm. to be just around. She was so wonderful to be around. I would like people to think of me that way, versus perfect or sensational or talented. You know what I mean? Because talent is such a weird word, you know, and it gets skewed so much. But the word wonderful to me is it's such an umbrella of
just a joy to be around.
Yeah, I hope I bring joy to people and I inspire them to like do that for others for sure.
Well, you brought joy to this interview, and so.
Thank you. I appreciate
you coming in, and I appreciate
you
being...
But do you think I'm wonderful?
Open and honest. Well, the book's still up. No, I'm kidding. Yes, of course. Of course. You were wonderful on Crazy
Ex.
You're even more wonderful in person. And thank you so much
for coming on. Thank you for having me.
And for being open and honest. I know sometimes we talk about things like, oh, I was really struggling, and this was hard, and I had to take this other job. But the person on the other side of this camera is the person there right now.
No, you get it.
So,
you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So go do your vision board and then put your cell phone outside of your room before you go to bed. And those are the big things that we took away from this episode.
And go get a Texas Waffle Maker.
Yes. Hands down. If people want to follow you, by the way, after the show, at Gabrielle Ruiz on Twitter and on Instagram.
And on Instagram.
You can follow me after the show at The Only MC on Twitter and on Instagram. And certainly go follow The Popcorn Talk. So much wonderful content here every week at The Popcorn Talk on Instagram and on Twitter. We are nearing the end of this season of I Could Never Be, but there's so much more to come. So many amazing guests. And if you are new to the show, go back, look them up on YouTube, go on Apple Podcasts, just search I Could Never Be. And while you're doing that, like, comment, subscribe. I think it literally takes, I think I timed it the other day. It takes 3 seconds to go give 5 stars to a podcast on Apple. It literally scroll to the bottom, hit 5 stars. Try to beat me. Go and see if you can do it 2.5. There's your challenge. Until then, we'll see you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.